Julian. How are you?
I'm doing very well. How are you, Alex Kurtzberg?
Fantastic. Are you having a good day?
Sure am.
You are?
Sure am.
I've been really busy lately.
Yes, I have.
Yeah.
Which is good.
Yeah. You know what I like about you, Max, is you are always so enthusiastic.
Right? I try to be.
Yeah.
I think everybody's enthusiastic about certain subject matter and in their own ways.
Well, but your enthusiasm, I infer from like just a genuine happiness at practicing law.
Right? Well, I feel very fortunate to get to come to work every day at a place that pushes me to my intellectual limit every day, and I have colleagues that have high expectations of me, and so I'd say it's fair to say that I'm happy to be here.
What do you think your favorite things to do within the practice of law are?
I really, really like talking to clients.
Yeah?
And getting to know clients and trying to understand what sort of issues are challenging them, and because that's not really something that you learn how to do in law school.
Right.
In law school, you're just sort of confined into these doctrinal spaces, and they don't teach you how to gather facts or interview people.
Yeah.
So I've really enjoyed that experience so far.
Yeah. You have built a pretty good rapport up with clients too. I've noticed that about you. Max, what are we here to talk about today?
Contracts.
And what specifically about contracts are we going to talk about today?
So, well, there are several subjects. I don't know if we'll have time to cover them all, but there are fundamental clauses and provisions that should be in every contract.
Okay.
And so I guess any contract is going to have an integration clause. It should have an indemnity clause, and it should have a provision for term and termination.
Okay, good. Well, so here, I think in a typical contract, you would see term first, then termination, then indemnification, and then the integration clause would be last.
Sure.
In a typical contract. So let's take those in that order. Why is term important?
So term is the duration of the contract.
Right.
When the parties enter into the contract, they have an expectation about how long their relationship is going to last, whether it's going to endure, whether it's going to reoccur over a period of time, and they need to understand before they sign, and they need to have reasonable expectations what that timeline looks like.
Yeah, and it's interesting because small businesses especially like to work on handshakes, right?
Sure.
And then at some point, it seems like they graduate from the handshake agreement to some sort of written document, but things like when does this contract end are often overlooked. They'll say deliver this good or this service by such and such time, right? But then they often forget to talk about how long a warranty lasts or any follow-on work that has to happen.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what the term clause is for, right?
Yeah. And hand in hand with the term clause is often the termination provision.
Right.
And that's really important to have in any contract in case one party feels like it's not receiving the benefit of its bargain and it feels like it needs to exit the relationship.
Right.
So there has to be a mechanism in there that lets a party terminate the contract.
Yeah. And that provision is usually, I think, in the form of a how and under what circumstances the contract is terminated.
Right.
Right. So there's often somewhere else in the contract a notice provision, like how notices are given.
Yeah.
Right. So you would have in the termination clause something that says, hopefully, that the contract may be terminated if such and such event happens. But if you're the party whose contract is being terminated against your will, you would want the opportunity to
cure
it.
Right.
Exactly. And after termination, you would often find the indemnification provision. So talk about that. What is that?
Sure. So an indemnification provision obliges one party or the other to, I guess, protect the other party in litigation that arises as a result of the subject matter of the contract. So, for example, if you're a baker And this is, I guess, a pretty common example. You're a baker and you're baking cakes and you order flour from the flour dealer and you use that flour to bake your cakes and you later discover that a bunch of people got sick because the flour was tainted. So now all those customers who ate your cakes and got sick sue you. You can turn around and say, hey, flour dealer, you sold me flour that was tainted. We have this indemnity provision in our contract that says you're obliged to indemnify me as a result of a loss sustained from you breaching the contract, which was you selling me tainted flour.
It's almost like insurance.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And the indemnification provision, just like we talked about with termination, can be expressed in terms of a how does indemnification occur, right? Mm-hmm. Notice is usually given, and then the other party has to step in to defend. And then a under what circumstances, right? So what kinds of harms would indemnification be triggered in, right?
Sure. I guess it can vary, and it's oftentimes the subject of negotiation between parties to a contract.
Right.
Typically, one party who doesn't want to indemnify the other party will try to limit that clause as much as possible.
Where I tend to see indemnification the most is in buying and selling a business, at least in terms of an indemnification clause being heavily negotiated.
Sure.
Right. In those circumstances, the seller of a business wants to receive his money and walk away, right, and not look back.
Mm-hmm.
And the buyer of the business, or for example, a big piece of equipment or a piece of real estate, often wants to be indemnified by the seller for things that they didn't realize were happening.
Right.
Taxes, for example.
Something that wasn't disclosed to the buyer.
Exactly. And so what they would often negotiate is a provision that might say how long the indemnification obligation lasts. It's not forever, right? The sell, mm-hmm. The buyer of a business or of a big piece of equipment or real estate or whatever, the buyer wants indemnification for as long as possible. The seller eventually wants to move on with their life.
Yeah.
And then we've got the integration clause. What's the integration clause?
So an integration clause is super important because the integration clause says that this contract is the full and final expression of the party's intentions as to this agreement with respect to its subject matter. And what that means is that any other documents or emails or communications or representations made between the parties don't apply to this contract, because with an integration clause, the parties have expressed their agreement that everything we intend relating to this deal is in this contract.
Right. So another way to explain that in layman's terms might be that it's the agreement between the parties to the contract that the document that they've just signed contains within it the entire agreement,
right,
and that there isn't anything extraneous to it, like a side deal or a handshake or a verbal agreement or anything else that should be enforced.
Right. They have no other agreement.
Right. And that becomes really important when you want to avoid he said, she said.
Yeah.
Right. So you sign, for example, like a simple one-page purchase agreement, and then the buyer of the widget says, yeah, but this seller promised a warranty.
Right.
And promised that this thing was going to work for the next 5 years. And the seller says, no, I didn't promise that. In fact, if I had promised it, it would be in this contract, which has an integration clause in it that says everything that we've talked about is within the four corners of this document. Right.
Exactly.
So, yeah, that is a super important provision in any contract. And it's one that I think you see a lot, and take for granted.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Another way to think about it would be to say that an integration clause prohibits a party from changing the terms of the contract after the parties have signed it.
When I think about clients who've drafted their own contracts and then come to us after the fact because there's a problem,
mm-hmm.
it's often because that integration clause wasn't in it.
Right.
Right. It's often because one of the parties to the dispute says, no, there's more to this contract than what's just written into the document.
Right. Right.
Max, this has been a great lesson in contracts. I'm sure our 57 million listeners appreciate it. All right, folks, thanks for tuning in. We'll see you next time. Thanks, Max.
Thank you.